come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Nice weather this weekend, huh? I hope it didn't keep you home. There were so many great events this weekend, especially the little crafts fairs, truly local ones. I hope you were able to get out to some. I was at one all day yesterday, working on the other end of it, selling and shopping a little bit, too. That was down in Marin. But I love real weather, and boy, did the earth need that nice bit of water it got. Before I introduce tonight's guest, there's something I wanted to tell you about. And remember, you can always ask me questions at catsmilk@sonic.net. Just send me an email. If you become a fan of Mouthful on Facebook, you can just post your question. I check a couple of times a day, so that's a really good way to get information, too, especially if you miss a phone number or an email address. You all know Safari West. We've had them on the show several times. And you've probably, if you're here in Sonoma County, you've heard that Gajima, one of the two cheetah sisters who were the first cheetahs at Safari West, has had swine flu. She is fine now. She's actually the very first zoo animal to get swine flu, and they are fairly certain that she contracted it from a human, even though there's always really, you know, extensive measures taken to protect the animals. But still, she got it, and she seems to have responded a whole lot like we do. She didn't feel good. She kept her head on the pillow a lot. I think they probably made her some sort of chicken soup for cheetahs. She coughed and she sneezed, and she is now just fine. I know that my first response when I heard it once, I realized, oh, they're telling us after she's gotten well, so we don't have to worry, she's going to be fine, that, oh, I should send her a get well card. It's like, well, she wouldn't care, you know? You couldn't eat it, it wouldn't taste like hamburger, and so there's not really any reason to send Kojima a get well card or glad you're well card. But there is something you can do for Safari West right now if you feel so inclined. During the winter, you know, they always have their regular diet that is, all the animals have their regular diet developed by veterinarians for exactly the species, but they like special treats, and the treats that they prefer are fresh, very, very ripe fruit, and fruit pretty much a little bit past how you would be enjoying it. So if you happen to have apples on the tree, pears, Asian pears, some late figs, some pomegranates that aren't going to be harvested, some persimmons, or maybe some late grapes, you can donate those to the animals. And one thing you can do, if you would like, you can just take them out to the office there at Safari West, about, I think it's, what, 7 miles east of 101 on Mark West Springs Road, right there at Friends Valley Road. You take him into the office, and if you want, you can stick around, and they'll take you over to meet the giraffes. If you have persimmons, you can watch as the lemurs tuck into the persimmons. They love them. You can also send an email or call Safari West and ask for Aphrodite, and she will arrange for somebody to come and pick up that fruit wherever you are. I don't have her direct line with me, but I believe if you go to safariwest.com and look at the contacts, her number may be there, but I do have her email. It's initial A Caserta, so that's A-C-A-S-E-R-T-A at safariwest.com. If you've never been there, it is a great opportunity to just go and stop by and maybe begin to make it a habit. It's just a great place. And the animals, even though they won't necessarily know it's from you, will greatly appreciate your donations of fruit. So that is Safari West. And again, you can send me an email if you want more information about that. I'll also be putting it in my Friday column that is in the Press Democrat of the same name, Mouthful. And now, on to the guests for this evening. First of all, I have my co-host with me. It is Lucas again. Hi, Lucas.
Hi, how's it going?
And the author and illustrator of a delightful cookbook, You've Got Recipes, a cookbook for a lifetime, ages 7 to 14 and forever after. It's Gerianne DeVecchio and Françoise Dudal-Kirkman. Welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, if their names sound familiar, you must subscribe to Sunset Magazine. You were both there for
a very long time.
Very long time.
As a matter of fact, I started about 50 years ago in January. I'm gone now for a few years, but was there for about 45 years.
I always forget, were you executive editor or food editor?
Food editor.
Food editor. Mm-hmm. And Françoise, what was your position?
Well, I started doing freelance work for several years. And my husband was working for Sunset at the time, and I was doing all craft. And then I went to work. I was hired for 15 years, and then after that, I was freelancing again. So I've been with Sunset for, I don't know, 40 years.
Yeah. And was that in graphics and illustration?
I did go, when I was hired, I was working in the art department.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was doing layouts and designing the craft, especially at Christmas time. I did a lot of Christmas issue and doing photo styling and working with the photographers, and that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now you've done this book together. You've got recipes.
Yes.
Tell us how you got, and first of all, it's a book, it's a delightful book. There are cooking raccoons, a mouse, a rabbit, I think, a skunk.
Oh, jackrabbit. It's a little story, and it's called You've Got Recipes because it's an email exchange between two raccoons who live in San Francisco under the porch of a lady who happens to write about food, because I do have a few raccoons in my backyard. And who correspond with a mouse, Sophie Souris, right, Françoise?
Souris.
And Sophie Paris, Souris, who lives in a restaurant with her brothers and sisters. Now, the characters of Cleo and Henry are the raccoons, and Cleo was actually a real-life raccoon who was Françoise's pet for many years.
Yeah, I raised her.
Really? You raised, and wow. Where did she live?
She lived with us and did a lot of mischief in the house.
Yes, they're so mischievous.
So smart.
Yeah. I came home one night after being in Borneo on a research trip, and I came home, and I had an assistant at that point who would come and leave my back door open on the day I was coming home so the cats could go in and out. And I came home, and the cats were sitting on the back porch, and their eyes were as big as dinner plates. And they just sat there, and I thought, wow, they missed me. And I walked inside, and there was this very large raccoon standing in my dining room using that marvelous opposable thumb to tear into the 24-pound sack of cat food.
Oh,
had
yes.
not quite gotten it open when I got home. And she, I think it was a she, I just do, saw me turn around.
She was probably a mommy, yes.
Walked out, and my cats came running in the house. Well, I always think of that whenever I think of raccoons. They are mischievous.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they have reputations that precede them, but they are really quite charming. And of course, Henry and Cleo like to cook, and they like to mm-hmm. send their recipes back and forth. They find Sophie on the internet. But I should add one thing: the reason Françoise and I did this book together is because we met when one baby was in the little basket, in the stroller. Mine was in a carrying basket, and then she was ready to have another. So we have three girls between us, and they're 6 months apart.
Oh, wow.
And so they grew up together, and uh-huh. they all knew Cleo. And now it's their children who got us moving.
Uh-huh. To do so you're you have three grandsons.
I have three grandsons.
I have three grandchildren, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Boys, girls?
A boy and two girls.
Yes. Yeah. And where do they live?
There is one family living in Los Altos and mm-hmm. the other one in Palo Alto, in Pacifica.
And yours?
And my boys are in Denver.
In Denver?
Mm-hmm.
You make a lot of trips, don't you?
I do. I love Denver, too.
Yes, and you wanted to say something, Lucas?
Yeah, it's about the cookbook. Dang it, I forgot.
Well, you just think about it, and we'll keep talking, and you'll remember. I know you'll remember. So how old was Henry when you started working on this?
Well, I would say that it's been about 5 years since we started the book. And it really started because Françoise kept saying we should do something because we were playing with our grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
But she started doing these drawings, and, you know, I thought, we can't let those drawings go to waste.
The drawings... The picture here of Cleo and
Henry and Sophie.
Cleo and Henry looking at the computer. It looks sort of greenish, the computer, but I'm going to guess that it's actually a MacBook.
Yes, it is a MacBook.
Yes,
right.
I knew it would be. And there's the little Sophie, I guess, with her arms up, standing in front of some sort of tart.
Quiche.
It's a quiche. Yes.
Well, it's just an adorable drawing. And how do they connect with each other? What's the story of how they find each other?
Well, they go to the Henry and Cleo go to the French American Raccoon Skunk School in San Francisco, and their teacher showed them how to use the internet.
Well, there you go. I should have realized that's how it would be. And so they develop this correspondence with this mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems everyone likes to cook. All of them like to cook. And they share their recipes.
They do. And they like to eat. Now tell them about Sophie. Tell them about Sophie, Françoise.
Well, Sophie has brother and sister. And she lives in the kitchen of a restaurant. And, of course, she cooks she observes the chef. And when he's not there, she's there cooking.
But he does give good advice about safety in the kitchen.
Yeah. Oh, so that's coming from the chef.
And also, Françoise has provided the Cerise family with a private entrance to the Louvre.
Oh, how nice.
She has seven brothers and sisters that mm-hmm. live at home. She probably has older ones and probably more on the way. You know how mice are.
Oh, yes.
And, yeah, they do give safety rules, uh-huh. but also there are two pages with all the tools. And also we decided, because it's French and American, to have all the names of the tools translated in French and the titles of the recipes in English and French. And we have a glossary at the end of the book with the list of French words and their pronunciation and their meaning. And we have a young friend who did help us with that.
Mm-hmm.
She's a speech therapist. So she created this whole pronunciation.
Yeah, she's got the pronunciation guide.
But she's French-English also. So.
Yeah, she's bilingual.
But this is so much a book after my own heart. I went to just a public elementary school, and I've never actually learned what the program was. I have ideas that it was some sort of special federal pilot project, but the records have all been destroyed. But I learned French.
Oh.
This was in Northern California.
Oh.
Not a terribly practical thing, but I studied French in 4th, 5th, and 6th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an extraordinary teacher. And I learned so much in those 3 years that I just have such a love for the language. So it's great to see a bilingual book.
Did you go to France?
I've been to France many times.
Ah, okay, so you were able to use.
Oh, yes, and then French. I went on and I studied French in college.
Oh, good.
I've gotten a little rusty. Mm-hmm. In recent years, because I've fallen in love with Hawaii too, and now I go to Hawaii and study Hawaiian. But no, I still have my deep love is French.
Yes,
and Lucas, did you remember your question?
Actually, that wasn't a question; it was more of a comment
about the book.
Yeah, but this one is kind of about the book. My question is: how many cookbooks have you written?
Oh my goodness! Well, children's cookbooks. This is our first children-only cookbook, and actually it's our first project together that's not part of any other publishing house. But for Sunset, I probably have done 5 dozen books. Who knows?
Yeah, Sunset
I lost track.
We used
to do recipe annuals, and I did 15 of those and various cookbooks, and one loses track. But all very useful.
Yes, of course. Now, one thing about the book that I love in reading some of the back material or some of the extra material you brought, all the recipes were tested by kids.
They were indeed, and they were selected by the children. And one of the reasons, we haven't mentioned it yet, but we self-published.
Oh, that's right. And we will give all of the details on how to get the book.
Yes, and that's very important. We do have a blog, which is probably the easiest way to get the book, although it's also at the Gardener in Berkeley and at the Pasta Shop in Berkeley.
Oh, it is? Oh, great.
Yeah. But we were told that because of the French and the drawings and the recipes, we were told the recipes were too sophisticated. But I thought, well, Henry, Jack, Tom, Claire, Alex, and Natalia didn't think so because they were their recipes, things they liked to make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have something as simple as, you know, peanut butter on lettuce, which is, you know, doesn't sound like a recipe, but if you don't know how to do it, it's nice to know. But then my Henry loves to make clam chowder, and he wanted his clam chowder. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're going to make the clam chowder, real clams, you know.
And this soup, this one. It's
the zucchini soup with laughing cow cheese.
It looks like nothing, but then it's absolutely wonderful. It tastes really good, and it's pretty.
Well, you know, we have ribs. We have roast chicken. My boys love to see roast chicken come out of the oven. But I think to go into the duller parts of what the book's about, but really a lot of the recipes exhibit give you techniques, like the remoulade sauce shows you how to really make a mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. They do choux paste to make bougère and eclairs. Mm-hmm. They learn how to make a dough pastry when they make the tart.
Pizzas.
They learn how to handle vegetables. They learn some basic parts of roasting. So, and toad in a hole shows you what Yorkshire pudding is all about. So hidden behind the fun and the good taste are real cooking techniques that's what
and
we say.
For real food.
For real
which
food.
Which is one of the things I think is really admirable. You haven't, I find it in reading what I've read so far.
You'd make it.
Oh, I'd make it. But I also find it very accessible. I would have no problem cooking with Lucas with this in the kitchen.
Yeah.
The thing that I've felt in recent years that people make, the mistake that a lot of people make.
Food is play, and it's not
it's
play.
Exactly. It's food play. A pizza that looks like a smiley face. No.
No. And actually, we do have pizza. We were going to take the pizza out because the recipe is long, but the kids just insisted that we leave it in. But again, these recipes are geared to children. So instead of making a big piece of dough, you make the real dough. They didn't want to use, they wanted to do a yeast dough. We make the dough, and you shape it, and you bake it somewhat so it's crisp, but you don't have that distressing, goggy middle, you know.
Right.
And the little cheese puffs, they're made in a one pan size. You makes one pan full, you know.
Uh-huh.
I bet, Lucas, you don't care anything about standing around waiting for something. Once it's out, you want to eat it, right? You don't want to make two more pans of it before you get to eat it.
Well, not necessarily. It depends on
how much you like to eat it.
Well, yeah, well, it depends. See, if they're making something and there might be when it's ready, I might not want to eat it because there might be something else that I'm doing that's more fun.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
Hey, look, here's something you would like. Can you?
Oh,
what's
mango.
That?
Mango smoothie.
Does that sound pretty good?
Yes. Uh-huh. Also nutrition. You know, again, I hate to be boring about it, but nutrition is really an important part of what we're thinking
it
about.
It is.
Good food
and
is
real
good
food,
for you.
Fresh food, wholesome yeah. food.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I would point out on the back that we have received the endorsement of friends of yours, I'm sure.
Yes. All parents, I believe.
All parents, yes.
Yes. We have Alice Waters.
Jacques Pepin.
And Wolfgang Puck. Now, I don't know Wolfgang, but Alice and Jacques have both been guests on this mm-hmm. show several occasions.
Well, we just saw Wolf the other day when we were down in Los Angeles, and he's, you know, he's got, he has two more little boys.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and they're small. And he was quite excited about the fact that his boys like to cook.
Uh-huh.
And he's got two older boys now. He has a second set of boys. Let's see. Yeah, so at any rate, the book is really very sound, but the point is it's entertaining. And we do find children sit down and read it as a mm-hmm. story, because in the email exchange back and forth, it tells a little story mm-hmm. of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Little comments on the...
And here's one. Each one is topped with two, and it's all in how it would look on email. So it's two cleo.henryraccoons@greenhill.com.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, and you've got one of my favorite things in the world.
What's
pan bagnat, or soaked sandwich.
Pan bagnat.
Yeah. Mm. A good pan bagnat, there's nothing like
isn't
it.
Isn't it good? Yeah, I know.
It has to be nice.
I know. I spend a lot of summers in the south of France. My sister lived there.
Whereabouts?
In Mougins. Okay. But we would go to the beach in Cannes or uh-huh, go on the uh-huh. boat, and we made the pan bagnat, and it was so good after a good swim mm-hmm. in the heat of the day.
I went to visit wonderful. Liddy Marshall at her
home.
Oh,
yes. Oh,
in Nils.
I know. We used to be right near her. We spent our Septembers in Vaison-le-Romaine.
Oh, how nice. Well, there was a little, you know, just a little freestanding, almost like a truck, like a taco truck,
mm-hmm.
but they had French things. And I got a pan bagnat, and we were driving that day to X. And that pan bagnat, I will never forget the taste. It was just perfect. So it is great to see one here. And that is just one of the best picnic recipes in the world.
Good. And mm-hmm. it actually gets better sitting around a little bit. So that's good. Well, you notice the email addresses, but I will add, for those who have the book, there is a special feature, which is following our table of contents. There is actually a live email address. And Henry and Cleo and Sophie and her brothers and sisters invite the person who is using the book, if they have any questions, to email to this address.
Uh-huh.
And there is somebody standing behind the computer ready to answer their questions. At least as long as I can stand up.
Yes. Have you gotten many questions yet?
We've got one or two.
Yeah.
Surprisingly few,
uh-huh.
mostly because I guess they just...
They don't notice.
I think they haven't quite caught on to that yet. But it's there if they want it, but their mothers know, and that makes them happy. So,
mm-hmm. Well, why don't we take a little musical break, Lawrence, and we'll be right back with more talk about the delightful You've Got Recipes.
Frog went to court and he did ridin'. Frog went to court and he did ridin'. Frog went to court and he did ride with a sword and pistol by his side. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He rode till he came to Miss Mouse's hall. Mm-hmm. He rode till he came to Miss Mouse's hall. Mm-hmm. He rode till he came to Miss Mouse's hall where he most...
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Anna Jordan, my guests, Gerianne DeVecchio and Francoise Dudal-Kirkman, and my co-host, the not-so-talkative tonight, Lucas Rice Jordan. We are talking about a delightful book, You've Got Recipes. It's not a book that you're going to be able to walk into, say, Copperfield's or Breeder's Books and buy off the shelf. It's self-published, which is a whole really different paradigm. One way to get it. And, you know, always have your pen and pencil at the end of the show, because I will repeat all contact information. But you can just go to youvegotrecipes.blogspot.com, and the book is $28?
No, $25.
Oh, $25. That includes
yes. and then tax
California sales tax.
Yes.
And then there's shipping. So it's a total of $31.99. If people order it within the next few days, can they get it by Christmas?
They probably can. Okay. Media mail has been getting it to people within a week. So.
Okay. Okay, great. So it really is a delightful book. And again, it's not food play, like we said. If you read the recipes, they're sophisticated, but sophisticated in the way that, number one, they don't talk down to the kids, and they don't dumb down the food. And this leads me to when I was working as a waitress in a place that's no longer there, Oshenu. This family came in this one time, and it was winter. It might have been close to the holidays. And they were clearly dressed from a thrift shop in the most delightful way. Suit and hats, and it was mother and father and a girl, I think, a little bit older than Lucas, and a boy a little bit younger. And, I mean, they had on everything, gloves, hats, and they asked me for 4 wine glasses when they ordered wine, and they said, there are children. And this was the 70s, you know, today I'd still be in jail.
Mm-hmm.
But I brought them 4 wine glasses, I didn't pour anything, and they had wonderful manners, but they were all of them, but they were all just having this delightful dinner around the table. And then at some point, and this is what I'm wondering, sort of a roundabout way to get to some of your experience at sunset, it seems that at some point, and I'm not sure exactly when it happened, parents started dumbing down what they fed their kids. You know, the kids would be sitting in, well, sometimes at the Thanksgiving table, but sometimes in the other room eating something that they picked up at Safeway or warmed up in the microwave because they didn't like turkey. They had to have a hot dog and macaroni and cheese even during these wonderful meals. And I'm wondering if you saw any change like that take place during your time at sunset.
I think at sunset we often created menus for the family that mm-hmm. gave options which made it easy for everyone to be happy at the table. In other words, mm-hmm. if there were sauces, they might be mm-hmm. presented to be added if you wanted them, mm-hmm. but the core food was the same.
Mm-hmm. But did you notice a change in readership? And what, I mean, did you notice, I mean, maybe luckily you didn't, but the sort of separation of the two.
One of the things, sunset, I don't know if they still do it because I've been away for a long while, mm-hmm. but we did a lot of reader surveys, and one of the things that was especially interesting about the sunset reader was how important they felt the family meal was.
Mm-hmm.
Very high percentage of meals shared together mm-hmm. as compared to what the national average was always throwing uh-huh. out at you. And some people said the family wasn't eating together. We didn't, as a publication reaching a readership, feel that that was really the attitude. I mean, even in my daughter's family, the mm-hmm. meal together is terribly important.
Yeah. I know in certain parts of society that just seems to have vanished.
I think as fast foods have become more available, the alternatives have become easier, and I think that's one of the reasons. Uh-huh. Food has become dumbed down, but unfortunately I think it's been dumbed down for adults too.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. The other day, just a couple of weeks ago, I was a wonderful restaurant, one of my favorites, and some people came in with their kids and they took out meals from McDonald's and gave them to their kids while they ordered from this very nice menu.
I'm trying to get my mouth shut.
Yeah, I was astonished. I couldn't, and they were a young intelligent looking couple. And I was just really scared when I saw that.
Oh, it's not good manners.
No.
It's not good manners. Well, I make a point now trying to take my boys one at a time out either for lunch or for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't go to McDonald's anymore. They used to when they were little, but mm-hmm. now it has to be someplace and they have to eat something they've never eaten before. And they like it.
Mm-hmm. You don't go to McDonald's. You've never gone to McDonald's, have you?
Well, when I was with Kim and Scott and Stia, they were getting dinner, and I took one bite of a cheeseburger, and I puked.
Oh, so that's the only time, right?
Yeah, these are the places you don't want to. These are the places that you definitely don't want to go eat.
What do you like? Where do you like to go?
I like to go to Dee's Diner. I like to go to.
You like to go to Sushi Tozai?
Yeah, I like to go to Sushi Tozai. And I like to, what else?
You like to go to K&L Bistro?
Yes, that's one of my best friend's restaurant.
And I think you'd like to go to Rosso?
Rosso.
Rosso Pizzeria?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's more that it's
Pizza place.
But only sort of. It's very sophisticated.
Yeah, and I like to go to... what other restaurants do I like to go to? I have too many in my mind.
Yes, that's okay. And tomorrow you're going to have a big dinner at Yosemite.
Yeah.
Yes. And you like to cook as well, don't you?
Yes. Can I finish my conversation I was saying?
Sure.
These are the places you don't want to go to. You don't want to go to this one place where I went...
Oh, wait, let's not talk about that place. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't want to go to Burger King or McDonald's. Those are the worst places in the world. That's a fact.
Okay.
Well.
Yes, and we had a rather unhappy meal at a restaurant.
And
we shouldn't say anything about them on the air just in case they were having a bad night.
It was my mom's birthday, darn it.
Yes. Okay. What do you like to cook? What do you like me to cook?
I like you to cook. Let's see. This is on my menu of things that I like at your house. Shrimp salad. And mochi. And butter mochi. And
Crab.
With that really good sauce on it. And
yeah, that you do know what that sauce is? That sauce is Louis dressing.
Louis. And I like, what else do I like at your house?
You like
feta cheese.
You like feta cheese with olive oil. You like omelets from Ophelia's eggs.
Yeah.
With cheddar cheese.
Not only Ophelia's eggs.
That's true. Good eggs. We have one chicken named Ophelia. She lives with other chickens. She's not lonely.
And I like... That's cheese omelets to you.
Yes.
And let's see. I have lots of things I like at
your house. Yeah, so we don't... It's okay. I just wanted to bring you into the conversation a little bit. You don't have to... You'd be here all night remembering everything you like. So I think we're going to cook from this book quite a bit when we get it home. I think you're going to enjoy it. I think I think I'm going to do, Lucas? I think I'm going to start having you cook for me sometimes when you come over.
What?
I think that would be right. Well, we can cook together, but, you know, I think you're up to it. Have your grandkids cooked for you?
Oh, yes. Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the only time I'm going to ever cook for you is in when you're really sick and almost dying, and I'll cook you breakfast in bed.
Okay, I'll remember that. do they like to cook and present meals to you, that sort of thing? Do they prefer cooking with you in the kitchen?
I think, well, you lead off, Francois.
Yeah, well, now the two of my grandchildren are much, much older, and they have... activities and
can they get you right on the there we go.
They have a lot of activity. My grandson, actually, who is now 21, he likes to cook.
Uh-huh.
He cooks dinner, and
Clara is cooking, you said too.
Yeah, and Clara, yeah,
she made for her class, you said.
Yeah, she made some eclair for her French class, and so they were very. Please, because eclairs is a big thing for children.
Oh, yeah.
It's so magical, you know, the dough, when it swells, and it's wonderful. So.
Now, what about when the two of you were children? Did you cook as a child, Jerry?
Well, I did because, well, of course, Francoise grew up in France, and that's a whole different story, but I grew up in Kansas, and my mother hated to cook. And I showed an inclination for it, and I think I did my first complete dinner standing on a chair cooking on the stove when I was 7 years old.
Wow. Do you remember what you cooked?
Yes, I made a meal that I would never eat today. It was chicken fried steak, in which I was so proud of how much flour I'd pounded into the meat. I think we had canned artichokes because my mother was at least interested in innovating.
That's pretty exotic for Kansas.
And I think I made pan gravy, and we probably had another vegetable, probably canned vegetable, but it was in the wintertime. But she was outside in the garden. She could see me through the window, and I was just cooking away.
And you were seven. That's a big meal. That's a major meal for a seven-year-old
to
cook.
I learned early on she would let me buy anything I wanted in the grocery store if I would cook it.
Wow.
But she was a forager. She loved to go out. We would gather wild plums and persimmons and make, you know, sand plum jelly and things like that. So we had a lot of fun together doing that sort of thing.
Yeah. And where in France did you grow up, Frances?
I grew up in the center of France.
During the war,
because we were from the north of France and we ended up in the center. You know, things were bad in the north, and
Remember, your family was really looking for ways to get food.
Well, yeah. First, actually, from Lille, where we lived, we went to the Rhône Valley, where my uncle and aunt were living, and we rented a farm, And my parents, who were city folk, they decided, you know, the French were looking for food at the time.
Oh, yes, I know many people from...
Yeah,
from
so they were they planted pumpkins and potatoes, mm-hmm. and we raised chicken, and we have very funny stories about our experience as temporary farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the pumpkin soup in the book actually is something that she remembers from childhood, but the story about it is...
Tell the story.
Well, I don't know if we have time, but...
We have time.
I was probably four, and my mother had decided to make a wonderful pumpkin soup, and she got... She made the round of all the farms around and found, which was really something special during the war, she found some cream and some butter and I don't know what else. And then she used all the herbs from the garden. They were growing wild. Mm-hmm. And she made this soup, which smelled so good. But then, so the table was set and the bowl of soup was on the middle of the table. And I chose the time to go. We had a grandfather clock at the end of the room, the big kitchen. And I decided to play with a pendulum. Mm-hmm. So I went on my little bench. I opened the door, the glass door, and to catch the pendulum. And the clock, which was so old, fell on the table. And I was under the clock.
I was going to say it fell onto you?
Well, no, because the clock was sitting on the table.
Okay.
But all the dust and the needle and the glass and everything fell into the soup.
Oh, no.
So you can imagine. And nobody cared about me. They were all saying, the soup.
Oh, no.
But nobody said anything to me, so I felt really bad, but nobody scolded me or anything.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them. Wow, what a story.
Yeah, so this is, you know, that was a must to have a pumpkin soup in the book.
Of course. Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories about how difficult. Madeline Kamen talked a lot about the struggle just to walk, how far she would walk if she knew there was somewhere where she could get a chicken, say, during the war.
And we did eat a lot of snails during the war because they were, after the rain, they were easy to find.
Oh, yeah.
We went to the snail hunting.
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, really most Americans have not experienced. They don't know. That's like.
But, you know, I remember we're the same age, and of course we all had victory gardens, and you know, much emphasis on raising your own and preserving your own. And also I think it was, for me then, very good to feel the garden, and my son-in-law keeps a good garden going, and you know, they may fuss about tomatoes sliced, but they will always eat bruschetta if it comes off of their own vines and their own basil. So.
Sure, yeah. Did you have a question, young man?
Yes. Snails? If you eat snails, it's called escargot.
Yes, exactly.
You're absolutely right.
Absolutely right.
And are there escargot in the book?
Well, there is mention of escargot. There is a duck who likes escargot, and so we suspect he's a French duck.
Yes. Yes?
Can I say something funny?
Is it appropriate?
Yes.
Okay.
Half deer, half buck, I'm a duck. That's from Open Season.
I see. I don't know what that is, but...
It's a really funny cartoon about this guy. He plays in that 70s show. His name's Ashton something, and a bear. And then he's sneaking in, and he's throwing bunnies out his window because this girl has a pet bear, and he lives in his garage, and he's throwing bunnies out his window. Then he gives them chocolate, and he lights, and he's all, "If you want it, you better come outside." Then the bear says... Outside.
Okay, that's enough. You know, I think maybe you should have a talk show about movies, Lucas. You have a great recipe here for artichokes. That is great to see.
But you know, we were up here a few weeks ago teaching a cooking class with some children.
You were at Viva in Sebastopol.
And I was so amused because after the kids, they made gazpacho, and they made tournejole, and they made eclairs. And they each sat down, and they each got a book, and they sat down, and the first thing, one little girl says, "Oh, artichokes, I love artichokes. My boys love artichokes. They're so much fun to eat."
They were my favorite food as a child.
Yeah.
And I, later in life, you know, once I went to college and that sort of thing, started meeting people not from California, I mean, I met people who had never seen an artichoke, people who had never eaten one.
They don't know how to eat an artichoke. No. I was at a very fancy, I mean, a totally fancy, fancy dinner in New York one year, and I couldn't believe it. Everybody left the good part up at the bottom. They fiddled around with the outside. They didn't know you could eat the bottom.
The heart.
Oh. I mean, I just wanted to have them pass
That's
them all
That's the
over.
Best yes. part.
My, yep. my granddaughter, Clara, she loves artichoke soup, so... She asked me to make the soup all the time.
Yeah, good. We're going to take another musical break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of the practical elements of kids in the kitchen.
Food.
Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Little Jackie Paper.
Yes, it is Mouthful here on KRCB. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for tuning in tonight. The book is just delightful. You've Got Recipes. Jerry Andavecchio and Françoise Dudal-Kirkman are my guests. Lucas is off in the other room, and that might be a good thing. he's a little antsy this evening. The more I look at this book, and I'd seen, I think, 13 or 14 pages, a very nice email that you send out, and loved it. But the more I look at it, just the deeper it goes into both accessible and practical elements. I love these illustrations of all of the tools. I love the bilingual French and English part of it. And I love the way it shows measuring, chopping. A technique here about chopping French herbs that I've never seen.
That's Françoise's secret.
Putting the scissors, putting the fresh herbs into a container, like a narrow plastic container, almost like a 4-cup measuring cup, and then putting kitchen shears down and chopping them that way. That is great. So there's all those kinds of things. So let's talk about the practical element. One thing I always remember Molly Katzen saying when she came out with, I think it was Stone Soup or something, mm-hmm. She says, well, when you're cooking with kids, always remember where they're looking. If you're telling them about something up on the kitchen counter, they can't see it. Mm-hmm. She says, so always try to see things from their vantage point. And I thought that was very useful. So what are some of the things you can tell people who are going to be cooking with kids and maybe who are going to go out and get this book for a child and then work with them in the kitchen with it?
Do you have a clue? Would you like to lead off, Françoise?
No. Go on.
Well, I think, first of all, you want to make sure the instructions are very simple and things come in order of use. We're very specific about mm-hmm. that. We also list the tools that they use. We constantly remind them to use hot pads. Things mm-hmm. we're concerned about safety in the kitchen
mm-hmm. absolutely.
Because an accident will make everybody unhappy.
Yeah.
And the fact is the kitchen is a pretty doggone interestingly dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
And, as I said, we've designed these recipes to a scale.
Mm-hmm.
We're not making 3 pans of Gruyere. We're making mm-hmm. one panful.
Yes.
We're making, there's, you know, you're not making 12 dozen cookies and the kids are walking off. Actually, we're not making any cookies. We do have a cookie cake. But things are scaled to have a finished amount, something you can achieve in one amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
We give a lot of instructions about how to handle hot things.
Mm-hmm. What about knives? What's your feeling about knives and kids?
Chef George has definitely advised Sophie and the children how to hold your fingers back. And there's an illustration.
Uh-huh.
And as we say, well, we don't say it here, but basically, if I can see your fingernails, the knife can too.
Mm-hmm.
So you cook with your claws.
Mm-hmm.
You keep your claws turned in. So mostly we're just interested in seeing them be not, we don't want them to get confused.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an excellent way to apply fractions and measures and things like that. But there's no guessing. It's just very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, that's why we have several adults buying our book.
And what do you think is a reasonable age for a kid to actually be alone cooking in the kitchen, your personal experience notwithstanding?
Well, you know, we've established this. We've set the ages of this book from 7 to 14.
Mm-hmm.
One, at 7, you can read well,
mm-hmm.
And you can cook earlier. I mean, all my boys could flip crepes by the time they were 4.
Mm-hmm.
At 14, as Françoise, you know, the kids get older and they're not, they even if they listen to you, they don't want you to know it. So, Now, ask your question again. I've had a total gray matter moment.
And I know it just wouldn't come out of my mouth. At what age do you think it's totally fine and safe to have a kid alone cooking in the kitchen?
I think by nine. They know enough about knives. I mean, they've been Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts. They've had to use a pin knife and done things. So by this time, and most of them have started a campfire, so they've got the respect that they have for things being dangerous. So
I think I cooked my first dinner party when I was nine. Alone in the kitchen, but I'd been cooking. I got my first cookbook when I was eight, and I was alone in the kitchen cooking from that. Mm-hmm. My mother didn't want to be anywhere around it. she was not a happy cook.
Yes. Well, it gives you a lot of freedom.
Yes.
It's probably good to have an adult in the house somewhere.
Yes, you want. Sure. Yeah, of accidents. One of our first rules, in case of accidents, call an adult.
Yes, very good advice.
Our advices are quite specific, you know. Chef George was very, very helpful. And so unless your parents say you're old enough to cook alone, have somebody there. So the parent is the best person to decide how old you are to cook. So
just getting to know your kid, knowing your kid and knowing what your kid is capable of. Do you have any events coming up? Anything up here in the North Bay?
We're going to be at the French Consulate next week.
At
the pasta shop on the 19th for a signing.
But you will be. What are you going to be doing at the French Consulate?
We're doing a presentation of the book, and Martine Saunier is going to be doing wines. We were at the French American School last week, did a reading from the book, and we have a book party, and we're doing a City College auxiliary event tomorrow in San Francisco for San Francisco.
At City College?
Auxiliary fundraiser thing we're doing tomorrow.
My French teacher from college, I don't know if she's still there, but she was at City College. If you ever came across Angèle Pastore.
The name sort of sounds familiar.
She was at City College she was actually my teacher up here at Sonoma State. Mm-hmm. But then I did a book signing down at Book Passage, and this woman got two books, and she says, I want you to sign one for a friend who's a French teacher. And she said, her name is Angèle. And I said, you don't mean Angèle Pastore? And she said, yes, I do. It's like, I've searched for her for years. And we corresponded a little bit. She had just had, I think, a niece or nephew was just born up in Paradise. We were very busy, and we didn't see each other. And I keep hoping our paths are going to cross.
Paradise. You know, Linda Anasasananan from our Sunset staff was on our staff. You know, great writer. She's from Paradise.
Oh, really?
Yes, you see, small world.
Yes. Yes. Well, if you come across, Angèle Pastore is from Tunisia or Algeria. Mm-hmm. Italian by ancestry, French by culture. Beautiful woman, the most marvelous French teacher anyone could ever have. I just adored her. Anyway, it's very exciting that you're going to be at the French Consulate. Now, let's talk a little bit. So it's self-published. And is it better, and I don't understand the whole paradigm of self-publishing, is it better to buy the book from you rather than to go to Amazon or something like that?
Yes, actually, we are offering the best price available. Okay. And if you want to find the book, just remember You've Got Recipes, just like You've Got Mail. Just Google it, and our blog spot will pop up. Amazon will pop up, the publisher will pop up, and various other things about the book will pop up. So if you're curious, just Google You've Got Recipes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, is it more financially?
Oh, in terms of...
Is it better to buy
Amazon,
it through you?
Yes. Amazon takes a huge cut amount, of everything from everyone. Yeah. And they have the marketing, they have the delivery skills, but of course... We also have the delivery skills.
We can use
the post office,
too.
Well,
I'd like to send people as close as possible so that the authors are getting as much of the money as
you can. I think self-publishing, if you've got the patience, is probably more rewarding. But, of course, you're probably selling fewer books. And I think we're in this transition of publishing. We don't know where things are going.
Yeah, no, we don't. We don't. I'm not of the mind that everybody is going to be reading their books on Kindle and reading their newspapers on their computer. I don't think the pendulum's going to swing that far. So I'm a voice for something that you can hold.
I think
you can hold your book.
Everything has its place. Sure. And I like a Kindle for a trip, but you can't get images at this point or color.
And you know what a Kindle is good for? Let's say you can't remember where so and so said what. On a certain page, you can search. I think it's fabulous for searching. I don't think it's fabulous for curling up in bed at night to read. You know, I think a book is warm and fuzzy.
When I used to take 10 pounds of books when I was going to France every September, I always wished I had something that wasn't quite so heavy.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, anyway, the book is You've Got Recipes. It is, with shipping and everything else that you have to pay to the state of California, it's a total of $31.99. So $28 is the $25.57 plus California sales tax.
Yes, if you know what it actually costs, it doesn't sound like quite so much. But
yeah,
again, you know, we're a limited edition, and we're
it's an absolutely delightful book.
And it has a waterproof cover.
Waterproof cover. That's right. You won't get it all stained.
And we do have the blog. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, you have the blog. I've been to the blog, and again, you can go to Mouthful's fan book page and Facebook, and there's a direct link to the blog. Would you like to say goodnight, Lucas?
Bonsoir, mes amis.
And thanks so much to both of you, and congratulations for this delightful book. I think it's going to have a long life.
Thank you. We hope it's around for a few years.
Yes. And thanks to you for tuning in. Be sure to check in with me next week here on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. In the meantime, have a great week.
Food.